Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride's here, too. Joan is our good friend, longtime member of our Brain Trust. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back.
Hey there, Jim.
I got some exciting news.
Oh, you do? Tell us, please.
I'm coming to town.
Uh-oh.
And tell them what you're doing as I come to town. You're getting the heck out of Dodge, aren't you?
Yeah, but not intentionally.
All right.
Not on purpose.
Okay, that's your story. You're sticking to it,
right? I'm hoping you'll believe that. Yeah. Yeah. So what are you coming to town for?
I'm coming to town to – it's my annual pilgrimage, Joan, as you know, for Small Business Week, which is next week.
So you're not coming to see the sausage being made?
Oh, no. Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to be around the sausage makers.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I'm going to be up on Capitol Hill Monday afternoon, which I'll be telling my audience about a little bit later. But I'm going to be up on Capitol Hill, and so I'll be meeting some of the sausage makers on Monday.
Oh, heaven help you!
In fact, one of them is going to be on the show on Monday, and Steve Shabbat from Ohio, a ranking member on the Small Business Committee, is going to be on the show again on Monday. By the way, folks, Administrator Stephen Preston is going to be on the show tomorrow. So that's something you want to look forward
to. That's good timing.
And exactly. And I'm going to be up there, Joan, as you know, I'm going to be emceeing the opening ceremony, the opening luncheon of Small Business Week on Monday. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be fun. But you're leaving town.
It's going to be
town.
A busy week.
I am leaving town. Well, that's awfully coincidental there, Joan.
I know.
It's a little bit of a dirty little coincidence, if
it
you
is.
Ask me.
It's a very dirty coincidence.
Joan, first up on the agenda today is Kiplinger's first page talks about some of the turbulence. I love the way you talk about this. The airline turbulence is far from over. I love the way you mix those two terms there. So tell us what that means.
Well, this is sort of interesting because normally we're pretty optimistic about things, but now we're trying to poke holes in anybody else's optimism about the airline industry. We're saying you may think things are getting better now and things are doing well, but don't expect it to last.
Why is that?
Well, there's just so many problems with the airline industry that we discuss, but we're saying the good times are temporary largely because there's still a lot of debt out there and there's still too many, I guess, airlines chasing, I don't want to say too few passengers because there's plenty of passengers out
every
there.
Every plane I'm on is full these days.
But the competition, I guess, is still too intense for all of these players to remain.
Well, of course, the problem is it's hard as heck to run an airline successfully financially.
Right.
Because of fuel prices and regulations and the employee contracts and all the different things. The terrorism things that are imposed upon them. I don't know how much of the new things, every time something new happens, I don't know how much of that costs them money. I don't think any of it's subsidized by the government. Maybe it is, but I don't think it is. I don't know why anybody would want to start a new airline, and yet people are.
Well, I think maybe, you know, a lot of these upstarts have been trying to go against the legacy carriers, and some have been succeeding, but it's just sort of hard to know how well they can do in the long term.
Well, another thing, you guys say the fleets are aging and need replacement. Of course, I guess you are talking about the legacy carriers because the newer upstarts, as you call them, they're flying a lot of these regional jets, aren't they?
That's right, exactly.
And they're brand new.
Right.
So that's not too bad. Air traffic congestion will worsen, you say. So see, doesn't that imply, though, Joan, that the traffic will be up? That means more butts in seats and more tickets bought?
Well, that's true. But I guess still if you have too many competitors, there's still going to be cutthroat pricing, which is great, I guess, at least in the short term for passengers.
You buy any tickets lately?
They're not that cutthroat. Oh, no.
I bought a lot of tickets lately. They're not that cutthroat.
Oh, gosh.
About three or four years ago, you know, they weren't that bad. You could make a pretty long round trip somewhere for, you know, $200, $250, something like that. Now it's about double that.
Wow.
In the last three years or so. So I don't see a lot of cutthroat stuff out there myself. But and of course, you know, it costs a lot of money. But one of the problems, are you guys attributing part of the problems with the airline's business model with the air traffic system? Are you saying the way the government manages the air traffic is costing them money as well?
The way the government manages the air traffic system.
Well, a new traffic control system is a must, but it's going to take about 20 years.
I don't think that's government. I mean, that's because of politics. I mean, that's just something that I guess has to be done to improve air traffic control.
Well, I guess one thing. See, I can one as a pilot, Joan. When I think about how the traffic system, the air traffic control system works, there are a number of cases where if the system is not very efficient, the planes sit on the ground longer and burn more fuel. They stay in the air longer. They get stacked up longer, et cetera, and that costs time and money. They're off schedule. People miss their flights. Baggage gets messed up. Fuel is burned, and et cetera, et cetera.
To the extent that we have a season where we have crazy weather, which seems to happen more now than ever, even one small problem can throw off a whole line of planes.
That wasn't a global warming shot there, was it, Joe? I've got my global warming antenna always at the ready. By the way, Joan, I can hear. You know, I watch Discovery Channel. I hear their little political shots that they, you know, the poor polar bears. They're not. You know, we don't know if they're going to make it or not.
Yeah, who cares if they fall through the ice? Gee.
But believe you me, I can pick up on your little global warming politics then, Joan. I heard
that. Yeah, well, hey, if the shoe fits.
I pay attention, Joan.
Mm-hmm, that's good.
What's the outlook for passengers, Joan? You guys have a report on that.
Well, again, we're rather pessimistic. We say more delays. 36% of flights will run late by 2015, so that's, what, about 8 years from now, compared with about 25% now. So it's only going to get worse, not get better. Oh, and here's a big surprise. More crowded planes.
Oh.
You'll be in the middle seat more often, we're predicting.
That's the part that I don't like. You know, the cost isn't bad enough. You know, if we can work that out with the overall scheme of things. But what bugs me is sitting in these regional jets. Some of these regional jets are not very comfortable.
That's right.
And they're flying them farther and farther, like over 2 hours now. And to me, in my opinion, anything over 2 hours in a regional jet is too long. Stand by, Joan. Quick break. Right back with our good friend Joan Pride. She's with the Kiplinger Editors. Stay with us. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, we're talking about the airline industry as we wrap up that part of the discussion. I was talking about these regional jets, and you know they're very handy. I like them in a lot of ways because what they do is they allow airlines to go point to point rather than having to go through a big hub.
Oh, right. And the hub system developed, 20 years ago?
Maybe 30 or 40,
that was, that was supposed to be the be-all and end-all and ended up driving us all crazy.
Well, and so you can fly, get some nice flights, intercontinental, you know, avoiding the hubs altogether from certain cities on these regional jets. You got 50 people going, and that's okay. And under 2 hours in any of those is not so bad. Even though the closer you get to 2 hours, it gets harder and harder. But there is one airplane, the Canada Air. I have to say the CRJ, Canada Air 700, is a pretty darn good little airplane for, I flew one of those last week for 2 hours and 40 minutes each way.
Okay.
And it wasn't too bad. It was,
wow.
But there were plenty of room.
There's a ringing endorsement. It wasn't too bad.
It wasn't too bad. Yeah. And it was actually pretty good. I would, so folks, if you're looking for those things, any flight that you see with a CRJ 4700, that's a good airplane. And so I'd recommend it. Joan, let's talk about what's going to happen. What kind of phoenix are going to – phoenix is, I guess, is the word – are going to rise from the ashes of all this?
Well, there's we talk about some winners. We say one of these winners is business travelers because airlines want their business because we call them the high-margin crowd because they're paying, I guess, higher ticket prices than, you know, the tourist who's trying to get a bargain basement fare.
Right.
So you're going to have more of this. You know, you're beginning to see these flights that are all business class, and you're going to see a lot more of those.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the air taxi, the executive jet service, and, of course, Joan. I mean,
I love that. Know, I love
well,
that jet share arrangement. That's
exactly.
great.
Exactly. I mean, you
yeah.
know, Joan's talking about this, folks, like she knows anything about how regular people travel. And, you know, of course, she's going to be jetting away.
Well, I read the Kiplinger letter.
She's going to be jetting away on her own private jet. I tell you one of these things, Joan, I'd like to have is one of these very light jets.
That sounds interesting.
That's one of the I want to buy that and fly that around myself.
And cost only $1.5 million.
Only $1.5 million. You know, when those first came out, there was one that first came out about 3 or 4 years ago. It was announced. I'm trying to remember the name of it. And it was going to be originally it was going to sell for about $800,000 or $900,000, which you can't
wow.
buy. You can't buy a lot of new piston engine light twins for that.
Right.
So it was going to be, but now it's like it's more like about $1.5 million. They yeah. underestimated what it was going to cost.
They sure did.
So anyway, folks, but check that out, and you know, many of you out there like Joan can have your own very own jet and your own crew, and you won't have to worry about all this stuff.
They can aspire right? to be like me.
That's exactly right. Be like Joan. Joan, let's move over and talk about some of the legislative forecasts that you guys have in the handy-dandy little box on your front first page.
Yes,
there.
Sir.
Iraq funding. With all the political posturing and rhetoric and wrangling, what's going to happen?
We say that eventually Iraq war funding will be passed without the strings that the Democratic-controlled Congress are attaching now, mainly the deadline for withdrawal, I think, is what they're referring to at this point.
Right, right.
So you will see the war funding passed at some point soon.
Now, the interesting thing, Joan, is that everybody on planet Earth, everybody, including the lost tribe of the Amazon, knew in December that this was gonna, that what you just said is what's going to happen. Even the Democrats knew that that's what's going to happen.
Right.
So what was the purpose of all the, I mean, I don't know. I don't understand why we didn't move on and work on something we could resolve.
That's why you don't make sausage and they do.
Exactly right. Good point. But I mean, I that's a part of politics. I don't understand. If you realize that you're not going to win, why not go ahead and go to work on something that
well,
you can?
Well, that's the problem. That's one of the problems with politicians. They have to do things to make a point. They've been doing it for, and I think it's been getting worse over the last 5 or 10 years.
There's no question about it. It's actually been worse, gotten worse over the last, about the last 15, Joan. I think it's been
yeah.
through two terms of
Democrats.
Well,
I was too young to remember 15 years
I know,
years ago,
this is
you know?
Before your time.
Right.
I do believe it was during two terms of a Democrat president and now two terms of Republicans. I believe that you're exactly right about that, and more's the pity, Joan. Minimum wage, what's going to happen with that?
Well, we do say that bill will pass and there will be tax breaks for business included in the bill.
Well, Joan, aren't
They're
you proud of me?
They're just being real slow about it.
Aren't you proud of me?
I'm waiting for the speech.
You're waiting on my soapbox, aren't you? You're waiting
I
on me?
I know.
Well, you're waiting on
Are
my
you
righteous
feeling okay, Jim?
You're waiting
What's
on my
matter?
Righteous indignation, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, all I'm going to say, folks, is I predicted it. And, Joan, I'm amazed it hasn't already happened. You know the reason it hasn't happened?
Why hasn't it
Because they
happened?
Stuck it in the Iraqi bill.
Oh, that's
they
right.
They stuck it in the supplemental.
Right, right.
And another big mistake, I think. If the Democrats wanted that, they shouldn't have put it in there because that was a fight they weren't going to win.
Right.
So I don't get this, but I mean it's fine with me because it puts it off, and the longer they put it off, maybe it won't happen. Stand by. Quick break. Joan Pride and I will be right back. It's 29 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the arch opponent of a minimum wage increase. And I'm happy to say that and happy to defend that with anybody who would like to discuss it with me. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Is Bad Boy.
You're bad, and I like it.
Yep, he's one bad apple.
That's right, we're bad. That's right.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Joan Pride is our guest. And Joan, do you like the Bad Boys?
I really don't want to discuss that. Thank you. I knew that question was coming.
Now, Joan, you've heard that before. I've never brought
yes,
that up.
Yes, I have. You
I've
play
never
that
this.
Every... So you're
never,
getting to the point where you play it every single show when
no,
that
no,
I'm on.
I don't either. And I've never asked you this question. Do you like Bad Boys? Huh?
I refuse to answer that question. Play some ZZ Top, will you?
That was ZZ Top.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Hey, Joan, let's move on and talk about Medicare. Is there anything, any changes going to happen there?
Well,
what is being proposed?
Well, there's a lot. There are some changes that Congress wants to make to the Medicare prescription drug program, first of all, in terms of the government being able to negotiate prices with drug companies. But we say that it's just going to be a lot of debate and there won't be any legislation passed this year.
All right. What about fuel economy?
Well,
we're going to get increases in fuel economy?
Oh, gosh. I hate to tell you, but we are. I see another soapbox coming.
Oh, no. Wait a minute. What are you talking? I feel wrongly accused here, Joan. What are you saying? What is it going to be, the fuel economy increase? What's that going to happen?
I see a check mark, so that must mean it's going to pass.
It's going to pass.
Yeah.
Well, what's wrong with that? That's good. Joan, I don't have anything against fuel economy increasing.
Oh, good. Okay, good. I'm glad.
What I got a problem with is rolling back emissions to 1990 standards in 3 years.
See, I knew something was coming. I knew it.
Well, look for my column this week. I'm writing about global warming. The essence of my column this week, Joan, is global warming may not be junk science, but Kyoto is junk policy. How about that? That's catchy, isn't it?
Wow.
Aren't you proud of that?
As, ooh,
you know,
yeah.
That'd be something even Kiplinger could be proud of.
Put notes to that and make it a song.
How come stem cell research? I thought that was going to... Well, I guess the
Yeah, but the president's... The stem cell research bill has the votes, but the president will veto it, and there aren't enough votes to override the veto.
Right. I hear you. That's in the news recently. Immigration change. Is actually going to happen with immigration?
I can't believe, you know, we say yes, but we just say immigration changes. We don't say, you know, comprehensive overhaul this year, and I think it would be hard to get something really big this year.
Joan, this is such a huge issue. This is such a complicated issue. The only way to solve this is for there to be some serious leadership from serious people who really are more interested in solving this problem than they are in their own politics. Joan, what world am I describing? It's not planet Earth.
Right. But it is interesting to see that there's this different alignment than you usually get on issues.
Yep, yep.
The president and in some cases the Democrats and I guess moderate Republicans have kind of the same view in terms of the need for some form of guest worker program and some, I guess, ability of the law to protect businesses so they don't lose all the workers that they need.
Right. Yeah, it's a very serious thing, and we need to get it fixed, Joan. It's causing a lot of problems, and the thing is, right now, in many cases, the good of leaving it like it is, there are some benefits, but eventually those benefits are going to turn sour, I think. And we got to solve this thing. And I just don't see the leadership credentials out there to fix this. Do you?
Well, it's also tough if the president was at a different point in his tenure and had more political clout. I think it would be easier to do.
Yeah, no question about it. Isn't it interesting how the last two presidents have had to spend their political clout, Clinton on his issues and Bush on his issues.
Right.
And have been typically in both cases, have been one case, one issue that really hamstrung them, I should say.
Right.
Jonas, quickly, one more on the estate tax repeal.
Yes. Forget about it. Now, but
yeah.
Just to clarify, the estate tax is going to be repealed. The current law repeals it. It's gradually phasing out, and it will be repealed, if I'm not mistaken, at the end of 2009. So you won't have an estate tax in 2010, but it comes back in 2011. And this is why I keep saying don't watch the sausage being made, because I can't even logically explain why this happens. I can explain it, but not logically.
Well, that's exactly right. Well, the only way to explain it is to take yourself to Bizarro World, Joan.
Right.
You know, when
well,
I was a kid, there was a magazine. When I was a kid, there was a comic book called Bizarro World. Everything was reverse. You know, the vacuum cleaner didn't take in garbage. It spit out garbage. You know, and that, everything was called Bizarro World, folks. In Congress, we have Bizarro World. Only in Bizarro World would they do away with something and then bring it back the next year.
That's
and then
right.
and with no sense of irony or shame that they've just done that. Stand by. We'll be right back. Woody Till. Barbara Lewis, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, stranger.
That's from the Wayback Machine, right, Joan?
Oh, please.
Isn't that a nice song, Joan?
Yeah, it's very nice.
Isn't that a nice romantic song?
Yeah.
I'm trying to build a mood here, Joan.
Oh, really?
How am I doing? Joan, let's talk about the economy. $3 a gallon gas, you're scaring me here, Joan. I don't need this.
I know, I'm scaring myself.
I don't need this.
I know, I don't understand this.
Well, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, I know. Well, we have to say what we think is going to happen. It's what we say national average. So
you can think I'm a Jinidad for the last gas tax hike. He took those prisoners.
Oh, the hostages, right?
Yeah. Thank you for that. Cheaper average gasoline costs won't do much to lower inflation. Well, I'm confused, Joan. $3 a gallon gas in one paragraph, and then cheaper gasoline costs in the next paragraph. I'm confused.
Well, we're saying that the brisk price run-up should lose steam fairly quickly. And we say, you got to read the whole thing, Jim. Work with me now. Yeah, on average 2007 gas prices will still be lower than last year's. So we're saying you're going to see a blip, you're going to see $3, but then it's going to go back down to about $2.50.
Right. Joan, you're our stagflation person. You're our stagflation expert.
I grew up with stagflation. But I thought stagflation was the norm. I did.
This is your soapbox, Joan. Go ahead and tell us what stagflation is.
Well, in Economics 101, you're taught that inflation is connected to an overheated economy, whereas a stagnant economy means lower prices. And in the 1970s, for a variety of reasons, not the least of which was the oil crisis in the Middle East, you had a stagnant economy and rising inflation, and it's just a seeming sort of almost death spiral in the economy. We just didn't know how to get ourselves out of it. And I can remember the interest rates just going up and up and up, and it was very scary because you couldn't seem to, quote-unquote, grow your way out of it. And the Fed was trying to keep inflation under control, but the more it did that, the more it kept taking whacks at the economy.
And where we are right now, Joan, we're in a very perplexing situation right now because unemployment is very low, 2 million jobs going wanting. The stock market reached record highs this week, and yet the economy is slowing, and nobody can figure that out.
That's right. But price growth, we're saying, remains low. You know, things aren't that bad, but we're wondering why they're not better, I think.
Right. But you guys, now, Joan, did you coin this new term?
Slugflation? No, I can't.
I don't even like to say that.
What? I can't take credit or blame for that one.
Where'd that come from? Only Kiplinger could come up with something like this.
This is why you pay the big bucks to get letter.
But it's in quotes, so should we be attributing this to someone?
I don't know. That's a good question.
What is slugflation?
Well, we're saying
have to do
again
with anything to do with escargot or anything like that?
Right. Well, the economy is still somewhat strong because the consumers are fueling it with their spending, and price growth is still quite low, but you're not seeing anything really jumping out and moving the economy at a faster clip.
Right. Joe, move down to talk about postal rate hikes. I don't understand the new stamp, the forevermore stamp or whatever.
Well, because
it's
the forever stamp, I think, isn't really forever, which is what is confusing to me.
But so now you're taking us back to bizarro world, Joe.
Once again, you know, thanks to Washington.
Yeah. What is there going to be a new postal rate hike?
Well, we say that you know, of course, that the increases are coming on May 14th, and I believe a first-class stamp will go from 39 cents to 41 cents. Is that right?
I guess. I think so.
And there's also going to be increases on large envelopes and catalogs, but we're saying that the increases on May 14th are eventually going to be scaled back, and I guess the idea is the revisions won't be in place by May 14th, so you're going to see your rates go up and then go back down a little bit, not back to where they are now, but below where they're going to be on May 14th.
It's all clear now, Joan. How's the forever stamp work?
I'm afraid to comment on that right now because I thought the forever stamp meant that if you bought, say, a 41-cent stamp, you would be guaranteed to be able to use it forever, no matter what happened to prices.
But how do you use it and send it at the same time? I'm confused.
How do you use it and send it?
You have to buy a bunch of them, like 100 of them or something? I mean, I don't understand. When you buy a stamp, you put it on the envelope and send it away.
Right. Some people, I don't know how many you buy at a time, but some of us buy a lot of stamps at a time.
We buy them 100 at a time.
Right.
Okay, so I buy 100. It's not forever if they run out.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going to buy 10,000 stamps for the rest of my life.
Well, maybe the Postal Service is hoping that you will.
They've got, I don't understand, have they got a record? I don't understand how that works, Joan.
I don't either.
I mean, I'm at least as smart as the average bear, and I don't get this.
Well, and to make it worse, I've heard, I guess this is for people who buy stamps and squirrel them away for a couple of years. I've heard a description of the forever stamp in which the foreverness is going to expire after a couple of rate hikes.
So there's not really, it's like the estate tax. It's not really forever. And once again, we've lurched uncontrollably in the bizarro world. Joan Kiplinger's got a website, kiplinger.com.
And that is not a bizarro website.
Exactly, I agree. And you can subscribe to all their publications there, including the flagship Kiplinger letter and the tax letter and the agriculture and the California letter. Those three are biweekly. And then there's a magazine, right, Joan?
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And you can subscribe to all of those at kiplinger.com. And I bet there's a phone number, Joan.
Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Ask them for the Jim Blasingame 30-day free trial, and they'll hang up on you the first time, but call them back, Don't mention my name the second time, and then they'll still give you that 30-day free trial. Check it out, folks, when you get a chance. Kiplinger.com. Quick break. A lot more to come right after these messages. Here's Joe Cocker to take us out. You know, you just can't get enough Joe Cocker. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Joan, that's what you say all the time, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Joan Price, she just can't get enough of Joe Cocker, ladies and gentlemen. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, let's move over to the middle of page 3 and look at the Supreme Court cases. There's one, I think there's one that's not in here that I'd like to talk about. Have you got any thoughts on these Supreme Court cases? Anything there that looks like small business owners need to know about it?
Nothing that particularly jumps out at me, except for there's a case here asking that whether employees should face a time limit on when they can sue for discrimination that's based on salary. But that's, I mean, we don't have an answer yet. We're just waiting to find out.
Right. One case that did happen recently, Joan, was the case against the EPA, where about a dozen or 20 or so, I'm not sure how many, attorneys general from a dozen or so states sued to cause EPA to start use what I've forgotten the exact terminology. Do you remember, Joan? That it passed 5-4 in their favor, in the Attorney General's favor, to cause EPA to start regulating emissions.
Oh, I think the ruling was saying that EPA wasn't doing its job.
Well, no, it said no. I don't think it said it wasn't doing its job. I think it was giving the EPA new requirements for emissions. On carbon emissions.
The case I'm talking about, they were criticizing EPA for not having carried out the law. But maybe I'm thinking of a different case.
No, I don't know that we are. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But here's the thing. Here's the point that I want to make about this, Joan. When I've said before that Kyoto is bad policy. Kyoto, and I'm using Kyoto metaphorically, Joan, or analytic as an analogy or as a symbol, maybe I should say. Kyoto to me is the word to use when you're talking about rolling back carbon emissions to pre-1990 levels. That's what Kyoto, even though Kyoto is really not even on the table, I don't think that much anymore. Those sentiments, that's what Al Gore wants and a lot of the global warming people want to happen. Well, what I'm getting at is, what I said was, is if we signed the Kyoto Accords in the United States, we would have to comply with those because there would be people who would take our companies and our government to court in the United States to make them comply. And this case proves what I said.
I see.
And see, Joan, nowhere else on planet Earth would anything like what just happened in our Supreme Court happen.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't happen in Germany. It wouldn't happen in France.
Okay.
There are no people who are righteously indignant about any case that can take those governments to court. In those countries, the governments won't let them do it.
I see.
And that's the problem I've got, and that makes the United States uncompetitive. I'm in favor of alternative fuels. I'm in favor of conserving. I'm in favor of not being reliant upon Middle East oil. I'm not in favor of wrecking our economy in the process.
Gotcha.
So would you like to, you don't have any thoughts on that?
Not particularly, no. I think you made your point.
Well, what about, let's talk about small business.
Talk
to us about
the
angels.
This is interesting. This is here the letter's talking about angel investors. And states are actually trying to get folks to come out and be angels and giving them incentives and credits to help boost investment by angels. And we're predicting, actually, angel investing going from $25 billion now to $30 billion a year by 2010. That's only 3 years from now.
This is really good news, Joan.
Yeah.
Really good news. But it's only at the state levels, right?
That's what we're saying, right, yeah.
Only the states.
Once again, ahead of the federal government.
And this is credits, by the way, right, Joan? This is not
right.
This is not tax deductions.
No, these aren't, this is better.
These aren't watered down by percentages. If you're in the 25% tax bracket, you get a 25% tax break.
But only this under state taxes.
Right, exactly. What about those states that don't even have income tax?
Right.
Like Tennessee.
Right, exactly.
For example, or I think Florida may not have. I'm not sure, but I think they don't have.
Yeah.
So it doesn't help those guys. But this is like a bellwether, right, Joan? I mean, it's hopefully the shape of things to come. This is the kind of thing that small business owners need to add a new dimension to their capital acquisition.
Oh, no question about
access
it.
Access to capital. Yeah.
Because the bigger guys, the bigger funds, aren't going to be wanting to make investments of the size that angels are willing to make.
Joan, I talked to somebody yesterday who wanted to raise $5 million. I don't even think the venture capitalists would even look at a $5
yeah,
million dollar deal.
Not on the
radar. They're looking
screen.
At $50, $100 million deals.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah, we've got to bridge this gap, and it sounds like the states are working on it. And thank you, Ed Kiplinger, for pointing it out for us.
Thank you.
Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
Have a good trip.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, Washington, D.C. I'm coming to see you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.